Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5-quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
Sin City Stories contains explicit content that may be disturbing to some listeners, including strong language, graphic details, and depictions of violent crimes. Listener discretion is advised. The term serial killer originated in the 1970s and was coined to describe individuals who commit a series of murders, typically with a cooling off period between each crime. The FBI formally defined serial murder in the 1980s, highlighting the repetitive nature of the killings and the psychological motivation behind them. The term has since become widely used in criminology and pop culture to categorize and understand this specific type of criminal behavior, a criminal behavior from which Las Vegas has not been spared. Since its founding on May 15, 1905, Las Vegas has gone from being a small railway stop in the middle of the Mojave Desert to a glittering neon oasis of gambling, shopping, fine dining, and entertainment, welcoming tens of millions of visitors from around the world every year. Through its relatively short history, the city has been witness to over a century's worth of murder, robberies, arson, and mayhem. And that's what we're here to share with you. In collaboration with mayheminthedesert.com, this is Sin City Stories, Vegas True Crime, the sordid tales behind the stranger-than-fiction history of fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. It was July 18th, 2015. Heather Saul answered a knock at the door of her home in Charleston, West Virginia. Saul recognized the face that greeted her. It was Neil Falls, one of several prospective clients she'd interacted with on Backpage.com over the course of her work as an escort. Nothing about the middle-aged Falls had struck Saul as particularly out of the ordinary during their prior online interactions, but now here he was, at her door. Falls brandished a handgun, grabbed Saul, and as he shoved her back inside the house, he told her, "Live or die." Then, while holding the gun to Saul's head, he demanded the young woman make a choice. Be sexually assaulted or murdered. The assailant then set his gun down and began to strangle Saul. But amidst the struggle, she managed to get a hold of the firearm. Neil Falls collapsed lifeless onto the floor after Saul fired a single round into his head. Responding officers discovered a toolkit of mayhem in Falls' vehicle parked outside of Saul's residence. 4 pairs of handcuffs, bleach, knives, and trash bags. Further investigation would reveal that Falls' attempted murder of Heather Saul was just the latest in as many as 8 murders across the U.S., including 3 women in the Las Vegas area. On March 6, 2003, Misty Sane's partial remains were discovered by 2 bikers off of State Route 159 near Red Rock Canyon.
Her body was found wrapped in plastic and a sheet.
The 25-year-old Sane's had found work in the sex trade before she went missing and was murdered. Jody Brewer struggled through high school and fell into prostitution, but she ultimately earned a grant for beauty school. However, when she lost that grant, Brewer returned to the street and went missing in Las Vegas in August of 2003.
Her torso, wrapped in plastic and a sheet, was discovered in the desert on the I-15 off-ramp to Sema Road in California.
Lindsay Harris was employed as a sex worker in Las Vegas after moving to the city from her native New York. The 21-year-old Harris faced arrest on solicitation from charges in 2005 and had attempted to hide her profession from her family. She disappeared on May 4th, 2005, shortly after leaving a message on her boyfriend's phone. Harris spent time at the Luxor in the night of her disappearance and had last been seen walking along the strip during the early morning hours.
3 weeks later, her legs were discovered off the freeway near Springfield, Illinois.
Police in Nevada and Illinois had long suspected connections between the slayings of Harris, Brewer, and Sains, but were unable to find a common link between the crimes. Steve Cooper, Charleston Police Department Chief of Detectives, said, "It's likely that Mr. Falls is a serial killer. And although Falls remains a strong suspect in the three murders, he has not yet been conclusively tied to the young women's deaths." Among the circumstantial evidence supporting a connection between Neil Falls and the three women's murders is the fact that Falls resided in Henderson, Nevada, starting in 2000.
And he lived there until around 2012.
Falls worked at Hoover Dam, but was fired after sexually harassing a female coworker. He also developed a reputation for torturing the animals that ventured around the dam, and in his conversations with coworkers, it was said that he had an obsessive focus on firearms and survivalism. ''21-year-old Billy Chad had already taken a life by the time he moved to Las Vegas in 1975. Chad was married, and he and his wife attempted to establish their young family in San Diego during the early 70s.
In 1974, Chad broke into what he thought was the empty house of Patricia Franklin, a secretary at the Scripps Clinic.
Chad surprised Franklin while she was in the shower prior to heading out for a date with her boyfriend. Chad grabbed Franklin and restrained her with the cord from a window blind.
He then sexually assaulted his unfortunate victim before stabbing her to death.
Chad and his wife moved to Las Vegas not long after the Franklin murder. Upon arriving in Vegas, Chad took a job as a dishwasher at a restaurant located on Fremont Street and 11th Avenue, while his wife found work as a housekeeper at one of the city's many hotels. One day in early August of 1975, while walking down Fremont Street, Chad encountered Delmar Bright, a 31-year-old porter at the Fremont Hotel. The two struck up a conversation about the sweltering heat on that particular day and eventually went back to Bright's apartment for some cold beers. A week later, Chad again found himself inside of Bright's apartment. As Chad later recounted the events, Bright had suggested they head to his apartment for some drinks as they'd done the week before. The two went back to Bright's apartment, had a few beers, then Bright made the short trip to the Fremont Hotel to pick up his paycheck. When Bright returned to his home, he offered to pay Chad $20 to take a few nude photographs. Chad agreed to the proposition, telling police he needed the money.
On August 11, 1975, police discovered the body of Delmar Bright in his apartment. He was found on his bed, nude, with his arms tied behind his back. Bright had also suffered numerous stab wounds.
Billy Chad didn't remain in Vegas for long before moving to Arizona, and from there to Louisiana. Apparently seeking something approximating stability, Chad enlisted in the U.S. Marines sometime after relocating to Louisiana. Fate took Chad back to San Diego, the city where he had first killed. It wasn't long after being stationed in California that Chad again acted on his murderous impulses. Or as he would later describe it, the monster that lurked inside of him peaked out. On February 15, 1978, while Chad was taking a bus back home after dropping his car off at a repair shop, he encountered 28-year-old Linda Hewitt and her infant son. Chad and Hewitt struck up a conversation, during which Hewitt mentioned she was on the clock as a babysitter and was returning to her employer's house before his children arrived home from school. Chad accompanied Hewitt to the front door of the house where she babysat in Mira Mesa. But when Hewitt refused his request to come inside, Chad forced his way in and pulled out a knife. Chad sexually assaulted Hewitt before stabbing her repeatedly in front of her child.
The gruesome crime scene was discovered later that afternoon when the two children for whom Hewitt babysat came home during their school lunch break.
Police tracked down Chad to his latest change of station in Lafayette, Louisiana. He was extradited back to California to stand trial for the murders of Patricia Franklin and Linda Hewitt, as well as for the sexual assault and kidnapping of a mother and daughter in Chula Vista. The mask slipped off once Chad was incarcerated, though. The murderous Marine started writing down the purported details of his crimes as well as his internal motivations in what would end up as an 84-page manuscript titled Dark Secrets. Within Dark Secrets, Chad recounted his life story and the inner workings of his mind, including the internal force that drove him to kill. Chad wrote about what went through his mind during the murders he committed.
My monster peeked out. He had been awakened. I tried to stop what was happening, but I couldn't. It wasn't me anymore. It was the creature who thrived on fear and death. A creature who had lain dormant for so long that he would not be denied.
Dubbed one of the most dangerous women in Nevada, Brookie Lee West grew up in a life of violence. West's mother, Christine Smith, was carrying on an affair with a married man in the early 1960s. Smith became enraged after the relationship was broken off, so she concocted a plan to lure her ex and his wife to a restaurant so Smith could apologize. Once the couple sat down, Smith produced a shotgun and fired a blast into her ex's chest.
He survived, and Smith served time for attempted murder.
Meanwhile, West's father was a violent white supremacist who was guided by the darkest areas of occult belief. When West became embroiled in a bitter custody dispute with the father of her child, West's father sent a threatening letter to West's ex.
Days later, an unknown individual showed up knocking at the ex's door and shot his elderly grandmother when she answered.
After West established a lucrative career as a technical writer, the first known suspicious death to occur around her happened in the mid-1990s. West met Howard Simon St. John at a substance abuse rehabilitation center in California, and within a month, the two were married. It was only a few weeks after being wed that West lashed out by shooting St. John in the neck during a domestic dispute.
St. John lived and decided not to pursue charges.
But just days later, St. John was shot in the back and killed. Police suspected West was responsible for the slaying as part of an effort to collect a life insurance policy, but prosecutors decided not to bring murder charges. In 1998, West made her way to Las Vegas, where her mother was residing.
Christine Smith's health had deteriorated from chronic alcoholism,
and West was on hard financial times. West suffocated her mother with a plastic bag and then placed her body in a sealed garbage can,
which West then placed in a storage facility on West Sahara Avenue.
West proceeded to cash her mother's Social Security checks in the amount of $1,000 each month for the next several years. When people inquired as to her mother's whereabouts, West claimed she was residing with her brother Travis in California. West claimed to possess psychic abilities, including having premonitions of the TWA Flight 800 crash
and the 9/11 terrorist attacks.
Despite these purported powers, West did not foresee that the airtight garbage can she hid her mother's body in would eventually develop a leak in February of 2001. Other tenants at the storage facility reported the foul odor coming from West's storage unit, and police discovered a grotesque scene when they unsealed the garbage can. At her murder trial, West maintained that her mother had died of natural causes, and she simply panicked about what to do with the body.
West's defense relied heavily on the fact that Smith's body was liquefied by the time it was discovered,
which prevented the coroner from rendering a determination on the cause of death. The jury, however, did not believe West's version of events that led to her mother's death. She was convicted of murder and sentenced to life in prison. Investigators in California also took a renewed look at the murder of Howard St. John to see if there was a basis to seek charges against West for that killing. In addition, she was also suspected of involvement with the murder of her brother, Travis Smith, in an effort to steal his Social Security benefits.
Travis disappeared, and West had made an effort to have his benefit checks routed to an address in her name.
Brookie Lee West made her way back into the news again in 2012 when she briefly escaped from the Florence McClure Corrections Facility in Nevada before being recaptured. Today, the woman convicted of one murder and suspected of having involvement in two others continues to serve her time in a Nevada prison.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
On April 4th, 1997, Ginger Rios, a young entertainer who performed with a group called Salsa Machine, was driving with her husband when the couple pulled into the parking lot of a shopping center at 3507 Maryland Parkway, not far from the campus of the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. She told her husband that she was running into the Spycraft store to pick up a book on credit repair so the couple could fix their finances in order to purchase a home.
Her husband waited outside,
but never saw Rios exit the store. Police questioned the owner of the store,
John Flowers,
but he claimed Rios purchased a book on how to disappear and then left the establishment. A local reporter even interviewed Flowers about Rios' disappearance, and Flowers complained that Rios' disappearance was causing him bad publicity. Just a few months before Rios went missing, Flowers had done an interview with the Associated Press about the chain of Spycraft stores he was opening in Vegas, Phoenix, and across California.
Investigators would receive a major new lead 3 months later when Flowers' wife, Cheryl Chacon, came forward to tell police about discovering Ginger Rios' lifeless body in the back of the Spycraft store,
with a pool of blood surrounding her head. Flowers told Chacon that he had struck and killed Rios after she got in his face and he snapped. Flowers stuffed Rios' body into plastic garbage bags and then traveled to Arizona with his wife and their infant child, where he buried the body in concrete out in the desert. Police searched the Spycraft store and identified blood belonging to Rios on the floor of a back room, and Rios' body was eventually uncovered in a grave in the Arizona desert. After his arrest, police found out that John Flowers was actually Craig Jacobson, who had a criminal record for counterfeiting and a warrant related to the battery of a federal officer. Jacobson was initially incarcerated at a facility for mentally ill offenders while being assessed for competency to stand trial. He had previously been diagnosed with schizophrenia and had claimed to investigators that, quote,
"The Russians are after me."
Prosecutors initially sought the death penalty, but the questions over Jacobson's mental state and a recent change to Nevada law,
making first-degree murder conviction more difficult,
led the state to accept a plea agreement. Jacobson was convicted of murder after pleading no contest to the charges and was subsequently sentenced to 20 years with the possibility of parole. 3 months before Rios' body was discovered in the Arizona desert, police uncovered the body of an unidentified teenage girl, only about an eighth of a mile from Rios' gravesite. The remains were later identified as those of 15-year-old Christina Martinez, who had gone missing a week before her body was discovered.
As it happened, Jacobson owned another Spycraft store
only a few blocks from where Martinez disappeared. Jacobson was extradited to Arizona to stand trial for the murder of Christina Martinez. He also confessed to the killing of another missing woman,
Mary Stoddard,
a teenager possibly abducted in the Las Vegas area. Jacobson claimed that Stoddard's body was buried near the site of Rios' grave, but he has never been charged in relation to Stoddard's death. Sheila Gay Griffith, a 22-year-old cocktail waitress at Caesar's Palace, had only recently moved to Nevada from Oklahoma and was staying at her sister's residence in North Las Vegas.
On the evening of September 23, 1979, Griffith and her sister went out to the Silver Nugget Casino.
Griffith was last seen alive leaving the Silver Nugget with a man described as white, between the ages of 26 and 30, roughly 5'7" to 5'9" tall, with a medium build and brown hair. Griffith's 1972 Plymouth Satellite would later be found torched behind a hotel in the commercial district of Eloy, Arizona, a week later,
on September 30th, 1979.
While Griffith's body was not located in the vehicle, detectives were able to determine that a toolbox had been taken from the car. the search for Griffith would end on November 27, 1979, when a hunter scouring for rabbits instead found a nude female body wrapped in a sleeping bag.
The body was located in a ravine about a half mile from Whiskey Pete's Casino near the Nevada-California state line.
Though several teeth were missing from the remains, through the use of dental records, police were able to positively identify the body as that of Sheila Griffith. The cause of death was eventually determined to be strangulation.
Another woman was taken only days after Griffith disappeared from the Silver Nugget.
62-year-old Johnsy Bame was leaving a local casino when she slipped and fell in the parking lot, badly skinning her knee. As her focus was consumed by the pain emanating from her knee, Bame was approached by a young stranger who offered her a ride home.
Bame entered the young man's car and was never seen again.
A break in the investigation of Sheila Griffith's murder occurred several thousand miles from Las Vegas when 32-year-old Edward Allen C. was arrested on charges of robbing a restaurant in Robeson County, North Carolina. C. had prior convictions for kidnapping and rape, which resulted in him receiving consecutive life sentences in North Carolina after being convicted of the restaurant robbery for being a prior violent felon. Telling police investigators that he was sentenced to all the time he could, C confessed to 5 murders, including 2 in Las Vegas. Agents from the FBI led the interviews with C about his claimed murders. C told the agents that he convinced Sheila Griffith to leave with him from the Silver Nugget. However, he became enraged when Griffith rebuffed his sexual advances.
He responded by sexually assaulting the young waitress
and then strangling her to death before disposing of her body in the desert. C also confessed to being the stranger who had enticed Johnsy Bame to enter his car after she scraped her leg in a casino parking lot.
He had witnessed the woman fall
and saw an opportunity to strike. C drove the woman home so she could clean up the wounds to her legs, but during the drive back to the casino, C attacked and strangled Bame. He left her body in the desert, though he couldn't remember the exact location.
Bame's body was never recovered.
Police believe C may also have been responsible for the murder of Linda Jenkins, who was also enticed to leave a Las Vegas area bar around the same time Griffith went missing. Witnesses described the man Jenkins left with as almost identical to the man Griffith was last seen with. Edward Allen C was convicted for 1 of his 5 confessed murders in North Carolina and received another life prison sentence for the crime. The conditions at the North Carolina prison where C was incarcerated,
which had previously served as a POW camp for Union soldiers during the Civil War,
were too harsh for C's tastes, and part of his plea agreement with Clark County prosecutors provided that he serve his sentence in Nevada. C pled guilty to 2 counts of first-degree murder for the killings of Sheila Griffith and Johnsy Bame, and was sentenced to 2 consecutive life terms.
Stephen Peter Morin had been in trouble with the law his entire life.
When he was just 15, Morin was arrested in Florida for stealing a car and sentenced to a term of 6 months to 5 years in the state prison. Morin next ran afoul of the law in 1972 while he was living in his native Rhode Island, where he was arrested for possession of LSD and stealing a Ford Ranchero. Giving in to his nomadic tendencies, Morin abandoned the East Coast for San Francisco sometime around 1976, where he picked up work as an auto mechanic. As he traveled, Morin made sure to change his physical appearance, which would later lead to authorities dubbing him the Chameleon. At this point, Morin had a chance to start his life over, but he proved unable to control his impulses, and his move to the West Coast would see him escalate his crimes to a vicious new level. Morin's legal troubles were initially more of the same petty crimes that marked his history up to that point. He was arrested in San Rafael on April 9, 1976 for possessing a syringe and resisting arrest, ultimately receiving a year of probation. His crimes escalated, and he was next arrested for killing his girlfriend's cat and then sending the remains to her workplace.
Morin and this girlfriend later married, but unsurprisingly, soon divorced.
A few months later, in September of that year, Morin lured a 14-year-old friend of his sister to an apartment
where the drifter tortured and raped the young girl.
This brutal crime led to Morin's indictment on felony charges by a San Francisco grand jury. But Morin continued staying just one step ahead of the law. He moved to Las Vegas under the alias Robert Ireland and soon took up with an unsuspecting woman named Sylvia. While on vacation with his new fiance, Morin visited the Yale University Library to scour the obituaries until he found the name of a man that was of a similar age and appearance to himself. The name was Robert Generoso. Not long after Morin moved to Vegas, he changed his name to Robert Generoso.
And then two young women went missing from public locations.
Susan Ballot disappeared after leaving work at a local cleaner's. Then Cheryl Daniel went missing from a supermarket parking lot while her boyfriend ran into the store to make a quick purchase. The FBI informed Vegas police of Generoso's real identity. After placing a few short and cryptic calls to Sylvia in December of 1980, Stephen Peter Morin embarked on a nationwide crime spree that would take him from one coast of the country to the other. Morin first traveled from Hawaii to Northern California.
Even though he was now a wanted federal fugitive, Morin was unable to keep a low profile.
He was arrested in Pleasanton, California, for brandishing a .45 pistol at two men during an argument on January 5, 1980. Morin provided authorities with an alias, and he was released on $500 bail pending trial. The fugitive was wise enough to know he could no longer hang around California, so Morin hitchhiked across the country. He first landed in Branch, Louisiana, where he took up work as a machinist. Morin kept on the move and traveled north to Buffalo, New York, where the serial killer used his trademark ability to gain the trust of unsuspecting people. Morin struck up a friendship with a woman named Rita, who owned a local antique store.
That friendship quickly turned romantic.
When it was again time for Morin to return to the road, he convinced Rita to sell the antique shop and use the money to purchase a van for their travels. Morin and Rita stopped for about a week in the Denver area, where he obtained work as a painter, while the couple resided at a local motel. It wasn't long before Denver was hit by tragedy. Sheila Whalen, a recent college graduate, went missing from her job as a waitress.
Her body was later found strangled at a motel room in Golden, Colorado.
Whalen had become the victim of Morin's steadily worsening compulsion to kill. Fleeing Colorado in November of 1981, Morin and Rita headed south to Texas. Rita grew frustrated at her new boyfriend constantly checking out other women and finally decided to split up, returning to New York. In short order, Morin charmed another woman by the name of Sarah Clark to accompany him on his continuing spree. Morin murdered two more women,
both times to steal their car as the couple traveled through Texas.
Morin and Sarah even kidnapped a woman from an apartment complex in Corpus Christi and forced her to accompany them on their journey. Police finally tracked Morin and his accomplice to a hotel in San Antonio, where they located the hostage taken in Corpus Christi alive and were able to arrest Sarah.
But Morin had managed to escape out a window.
Amidst the police manhunt, he took another woman hostage from a department store parking lot, but over several hours, she managed to use the quotation of Bible verses to convince Morin to turn himself in without further bloodshed. Morin released his hostage and phoned the police from an Austin bus station, where he was soon arrested without incident. Morin faced two separate trials in Texas for the murders of Carrie Scott and Jana Bruce during his frenzied flight from the authorities. Morin was convicted in both cases and was twice sentenced to death by lethal injection. In response to learning he had two death sentences, he whispered to his attorney,
"Now I guess I've got it in both arms."
Morin was also found guilty and received a death sentence in Colorado in relation to the murder of Sheila Whalen.
Shortly after midnight, on March 13, 1985, officials at the Texas State Prison in Huntsville led Morin to the execution chamber.
A technician spent several minutes trying to locate a vein to insert the intravenous line into the condemned man's left arm without success. Morin's years of chronic drug abuse had left his veins shot. The technician then tried to find a vein in Morin's right arm. As the serial killer had inadvertently predicted after his sentencing, he had it in both arms. Prison technicians eventually found a viable vein in Morin's arm. He was put to death after making a last statement professing his conversion to an evangelical branch of Christianity and granting forgiveness to the executioners,
but without expressing any remorse for the lives he had taken.
According to a 2023 count, nearly 7,000 people without a home reside in the Las Vegas area. And of that number, over 4,500 homeless people sleep in tunnels, under overpasses, or on the street instead of in shelters. Unfortunately, in recent years, predators have targeted the unsheltered homeless population of Las Vegas.
On November 30th, 2016, in the dead of night, a hooded figure approached a homeless man sleeping in a lot near downtown Las Vegas.
Without warning, the hooded figure raised a hammer and brought it down on the sleeping man's head. The man survived the attack, but he was unable to provide the police with any information about his assailant. Then, on the night of January 4th, 2017, Daniel Aldape was struck in the head and killed by a hammer blow while sleeping near a downtown intersection.
A month later, David Dunn was murdered with a hammer while sleeping at the same downtown intersection.
Investigators had no leads, even after three vicious attacks. Then, detectives came up with an unorthodox ruse to identify the killer.
Around 3 a.m. on the morning of February 22, 2017, a man lingered near an apparently sleeping person covered in blankets at a downtown intersection.
He made sure there was no one else on the street before pulling a hood over his head. The hooded man then approached the sleeping figure, raised a hammer above his head with both hands, and brought it down. Hard. The mannequin's head was decimated by the force of a 4-pound ball-peen hammer in the possession of 30-year-old Shane Schindler.
The apparent killer had fallen for the bait.
Police arrested Shane Schindler. After some legal wrangling and with no concrete evidence linking Schindler to the two previous murders, Schindler pled guilty to attempted murder for the attack on the mannequin.
Sadly, though, the hammer attacks were not the last time the homeless population of Las Vegas would be the targets of a thrill killer.
On January 29, 2018, Joshua Castellan shot a man standing outside of a convenience store in the small town of Logandale, approximately an hour outside Las Vegas. Then, over the next 7 hours, two homeless men in Las Vegas were shot, with Brian Clegg succumbing to his wounds. A few days later, on February 3, 2018, Castellan parked on a quiet Vegas street, exited his vehicle, and fired two shots into James Lewis while he slept under a freeway overpass, killing the man instantly. Authorities were able to use surveillance footage of the Lewis slaying to identify Castellan through his vehicle. Following the hammer slaying, Las Vegas Police Captain Andrew Walsh commented,
"As I say, every time a homeless person is murdered, the sidewalk or a soft patch of dirt is no place for a human being to take their last breath."
Through these stories, we see that there's more to the shadowy history of Las Vegas than just the glittering facade it presents to the world. Beyond the neon lights and bustling streets lie stories of darkness where the twisted minds of serial killers have roamed freely, leaving a trail of fear and devastation in their wake. Yet within that darkness, we find resilience and resolve in the tireless efforts of the law enforcement agencies and communities that seek justice and closure for the victims and their families. To learn more about this Las Vegas true crime story and many others, visit mayheminthedesert.com and get yourself acquainted with the darker side of Sin City's history. Sin City Stories, Vegas True Crime, is based on material researched and written by Megan and Anthony Smith and is adapted for podcast, edited, and narrated by Jeff Walker. Sin City Stories, Vegas True Crime is a co-production of Mayhem in the Desert and Walker New Media. Copyright 2024.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.